It's the My Michelle Live Podcast.
My Michelle Live, Health Watch. She's writing a prescription for hope. Here's Michelle.
Hey, thank you so much, big voice guy. He's such an important part of the program, even though he's just this ethereal voice, you know, that's just there. It's all right. We love him anyway. It is Health Watch Wednesday. We're giving you some information on what's going on in the world. We have been really focusing on Corona and the vaccine because it's not going away. There's more questions than there are answers. Nonetheless, people are really excited about the vaccine, and they will wait in line for hours to get one.
Yeah, Phoenix is the first of 8 sites in the entire country starting this trial. And even though it's just started this week, doctors organizing it saying that there's already such an overwhelming response with many parents signing up their kids.
I'm just really excited. I'm excited to be a part of getting this out to the public.
Rachel Guthrie is a mom of 3, and when she heard about the Moderna trial for young kids, she knew she wanted to sign up her 3-year-old son, Ollie, and 1-year-old daughter, Charlotte.
The risks are so minuscule compared to what the benefits are.
To qualify for the trial, kids need to be 6 months old up until the last days as an 11-year-old.
But today on the program, we're going to talk from 2 different points of view. From folks who say that, yeah, this is what we need. Come on, stop being afraid. Get the shot. To a doctor who says, wait a minute, I'm not getting shot. Neither are my family. And you probably don't want to get your kids a vaccine. And he'll tell us why. So we're going to look at all of the sides. And I don't know where you are on that spectrum, but I entreat you to please keep listening. Listen to what someone else has to say. That's the solution for the division in our nation. Just listening. And maybe we'll all learn something. And part of this push and hysteria to get the vaccine comes from the potential need for a vaccine passport. You may not be able to do a lot of things you used to do before if you don't get the jab.
COVID-19 has already taken so much from us, not least the chance to go on vacation. But just how will large numbers of people feel safe getting back on a plane again? Well, one airline is saying you may have to have the vaccine before they let you fly.
Overnight, one of the world's top airlines, Qantas, has announced all international passengers may soon be mandated to start getting the COVID-19 vaccination in order to fly.
What we're looking at is how you can have a vaccination, a passport, an electronic version of it that certifies what the vaccine is. Is it acceptable to the country you're traveling to?
The CEO of Qantas saying he expects other airlines to now follow suit.
Talking to my colleagues in other airlines around the globe, and I think it's going to be a common theme across the board.
And we could soon see similar requirements in other parts of our lives.
Airlines, businesses, and schools are going to be concerned about legal liability if anybody contracts COVID-19 on a plane or in a school or at a place of employment.
Essential workers will likely be required to get the vaccine, but the pushback against forcing people to take vaccines could be fierce. According to a recent study, half of Americans say they aren't willing to take an FDA-backed vaccine.
There are going to be many lawsuits from people saying, I don't want to take that vaccine.
Hey, my contention is, shouldn't that be your choice? As you choose for you, I want to give you some empowerment with some thoughts on both sides of this issue, because when you hear the whole story, it helps. It helps you to be able to choose for yourself. People are afraid. In fact, a new Cousy Newsroom reported on a poll about people and their perceived risk of dying from COVID. Listen to this.
There was a Wall Street Journal poll that asked people, what do you think your risk of dying is? And they were off by a factor of 2, 3, or 4 times what their actual risk is. Now, listen, I think it's good to be safe and it's good to be cautious, but you can see, especially for our kids, that the impact can be so dramatic. You see kids who have now lost, by the time the fall opens, about 1,000 hours of in-school learning. You can't make that up. us older folks in these realms, we can bounce back from being offline. Our kids, they need to get back to life, work, and happiness there. It's going to be very, very difficult to make that happen. And I think the sooner the better.
But what we really wanted to get to today is this fear factor. And there is a fear factor on the side of worrying about COVID, you know, that we are living in fear. We don't always know all of the facts. We give into propaganda and oftentimes the news stories, we feed into them. It's like an addiction and we keep listening and listening and listening and we live in fear where maybe we shouldn't. And sometimes we put our focus in the wrong places. On the other side, there is a growing number of people and people of faith that are afraid of the vaccine and anything coming out of the government. Some is just unreasonable fear. Some is wanting to ask questions, afraid we're not getting answers, but not knowing what to do. So we're going to try to find some balance because on My Michelle Live, we look for the God story. And that is exactly what we're doing today. You've heard some of the news. You'll hear more news stories. But we wanted to get to a deeper story. So we've invited a brand new friend, Curtis Chang. He's a theologian. He's the founder of Redeeming Babel. He is on faculty at Duke Divinity School, senior fellow at the Fuller Theological Seminary, and has actually put out a video trying to deal a bit with this fear. Curtis, I guess this is a Zoom 5. Hi, how you doing? Yeah. Glad you could join us today.
I'm so glad. Third time's a charm here. And so I'm really glad to be here, glad to get a chance to be part of your mission to spread the truth, both medical and biblical truth, about this really important decision that everyone is facing. Even people who are deciding not to take the vaccine are making a decision. So we want that decision to be as informed as possible by the best information, both biblically and medically.
Very well put. Really, that's where knowledge is power. And we see that running the gamut. We can talk about it with COVID, but it's really true in every area of our lives. And as we get to the God story, it's true with the God story too. We walk around with half-cocked ideas, things that are quasi-biblical, you know, and then we walk around spouting them as though they're true. They really aren't. So even in the most important realm, which I would say is the God story, we still don't always know the whole story and we operate kind of half-cocked. So maybe in the realm of faith, somebody has to be the grown-up in the room and say, hey, look at the whole story. So let's talk about this fear that everything, every area of this COVID thing, from front to back, from differing ideologies, is seemingly operated and pushed by fear.
I think that's right. I think it's fear and distrust are the prevailing spirits of the age. And I think as Christians, we are called to hope and trust as our fundamental posture towards God, towards the world, and towards each other. And now it doesn't mean we're all perfect or the government's perfect or the science is perfect or the medical system is perfect, but to have a fundamental stance of distrust and fear, I think is actually quite contrary to the way that Christians are called to live. And so, for instance, with the vaccine, we actually have a tremendous amount of reason to live with both hope and fear. I mean, hope and trust, because hope for certainly the vaccine is by far the best chance we have to get back to life as we wanted to get back to life together, to worship together, to regather in the church lobby together, to hug one another. The vaccine is our best shot at that, and it's a great hope we have. And the reasons for fearing the vaccine are really, I think, grossly exaggerated. Mm-hmm. We actually have enormous amount of reasons to trust in the safety and the efficacy of the vaccine.
Okay. Now, I tend to to be a little more skeptical of the vaccine. We've had quite a few experts on that have said, you know, it is not a one size fits all. And that's true. There are people who should be concerned about taking the vaccine, people with autoimmune disorders, people who have overt sensitivities and allergies. And we have seen people who have had palsy, death, and the like. That's very true. And that needs to be part of the narrative as well. It isn't necessarily a one-size-fits-all. And I get that. We ignore herd immunity with this amazing system that God's given us. We don't talk about things that we should be doing, like cutting out sugar, taking vitamin D, C, getting out in the sunshine. These are things we need to boost our immune system. And we're not really getting all of that balance. All of the things that we talked about are true, though. And that's the funny thing, Curtis, is that what you're saying is, you know, the vaccine can be a good alternative for people. It can be something for people, especially at risk, if you make the right decision for you. What I'm saying is true too, that there are reasons for concern. Great. All of those things can be true at the same time. Isn't it funny that we live in an age where we think it has to be one or the other? You have to be on one side or the other. We don't realize two things can be true at the same time.
Yeah, although I would say that, look, because none of us actually know this, I mean, as much as I've studied the science on this, I would be lying to you if I said, oh, I totally understand the science of the vaccine and who should or who should not get the vaccine, especially because I'm not a doctor. I think the message I have for Christians to think about this is to actually trust the experts. And by that, I mean, start with the expert you trust the most, namely your doctor. If you are wondering whether or not the vaccine is a good fit or you're at risk, start with the person that you would go to with any other health condition, right? If you were in danger of maybe a cancer diagnosis, would you make that decision all by yourself? Or would you just, you know, say, oh, I'm just going to go with my gut feeling on that?
Good point.
You would go to the expert, right, who actually knows the best about medicine, about the data, and you would have to trust that doctor.
And research it. Get a second opinion. That's perfectly fine.
Get a second,
fine.
Absolutely.
But
go
that's
get a second
good.
Opinion from a second doctor.
Yeah.
But don't just go. You wouldn't, I mean, if you had a friend who had that diagnosis, you wouldn't want that person just getting their information from some random post they saw on Facebook about their treatment. You know, that should not be any different with COVID. COVID is the third leading cause of death in the U.S. this last year, more than any other individual form of cancer or even, you know, any other of the major diseases. The third leading cause. It is a fatal and threatening disease. We should take it seriously and we should treat it just like we would. We should approach it just like we would any other medical threat and get the best information from doctors. And if we have religious concerns, if we think that there's some religious reason, that faith reason, then we should talk to those who kind of can help us guide through the ethical, the biblical, the, you know, religious concerns we might have.
So that's the issue that I really wanted to bring up as well. Now, it's fine that people have concerns, right? And it's great to research it. I am not one for just saying, okay, some expert in Washington, D.C. said I need to do this. This is my body. This is and if you're a biblical type person, it's a temple of the Holy Spirit, you know, God's given me this, I have to be a good steward. Okay, I'll do some research. And we've talked a bit about that. But then there's the other side of the vaccine that people are concerned about, in many regards, tends to fall within the lines of evangelicals, especially that the whole tracking system and vaccine passports and the ability of technology to have information put into vaccines. Now, it's not there yet, but there is a patent that they can put stuff into vaccines so they can scan you. And people are going, whoa, that's a mark of the beast territory there. That's wigging me out. And I totally get that. But there is a difference between selling your soul to Satan and getting a vaccine. We're not there yet, people. I get the concern, but, you know, there's some, we've got to find some balance there.
Well, Michelle, actually, we're not even anywhere close into that territory. There is no tracking capacity or device.
Oh, but there is.
Remotely concerned with
there
the
is. There actually
no, Michelle,
is. There is
Michelle,
technology
really
that is available. It is being tested. It is not in vaccines. It's nowhere close to being put in vaccines yet. And that, I would
that's
concur
right.
with you. But there is technology there, and that's what people are looking at for what could be taking place in the future.
I think what you're referring to is the ability to track the supply chain of the vaccines, which is true with anything we have in the world.
No, actually, I'm talking about a patent that they do have and that is being tested and being able to have tracking information with very limited information that is able to be injected and could be, and this is a very big could be, put into vaccines. It is being talked about. It is something that could take place, but it is not happening now. And so the vaccine that we're getting at the doctor, it doesn't have tracking device. You're not selling your soul to Satan. But, you know, when we're fed information on social media and we're not looking into it and researching it ourselves or finding trusted sources, as you mentioned, it is something that burns out of control. And suddenly we think that getting the vaccine is akin to, you know, ushering in the Antichrist or something. And I know it sounds crazy, but people are going down that road.
Oh, no. I think we have to take people's concerns seriously. Take, for example, the fear that this is somehow the mark of the beast. We actually have created a whole video just on that question alone. So I should say, you know, in an attempt to try to help educate people, we've created a website called ChristiansInTheVaccine.com. Mm-hmm. There's a bunch of videos on there. Each of them is trying to help people think through a specific question. So, for example, there's a video there on is the vaccine the mark of the beast? There's another one. Is the vaccine a form of government control? Can you be pro-life and pro-vaccine is another video. There's another video on fundamentally on is the vaccine safe? We've got a video there with an interview with Francis Collins, who is the director of the NIH, who oversaw the development of the vaccines, who is a devout Christian and the nation's top leading scientists to answer some of these questions about, you know, safety concerns and tracking and so forth. So I encourage people to go check it out. I mean, and to say, absolutely, if you have questions, try to get the best information. And on our side is at least one really great source with experts like Dr. Collins, who is, you can't get any higher of a medical expert to look at that question. So absolutely. And we have to listen. We have to start with where people are at. And we have to strike this balance between giving in to any fear that pops up on our social media feed and simply thinking that is true. And at the same time, just writing off people's real questions and fears. So that's what we're trying to do on this site is start with people's real questions and actually try to address them.
I like that because I do understand Danish researchers have documented for years TB, polio, smallpox, malaria. They all have when you get vaccinated, there are sometimes some unforeseen great side effects. And that's why we've seen so much development in the way of drugs that could maybe help with COVID, because there's unforeseen benefits to getting vaccines. There are some good things. They can help you be immune to things you didn't even realize. Now, conversely, there are also unforeseen issues, sometimes mortality from unrelated diseases. So, you know, this is where research is good. It is, you know, we never give into a one size fits all. But you were talking about experts that say, hey, you know, let's not throw the baby out with the bathwater. I just wanted to play just 2 minutes, if you'll indulge me, from Dr. Fuzz Rana. And he's a molecular biologist. He is also one of the contributors to Reasons to Believe. And he talked about the vaccine not only being something that we think of as brand new. He said, no, indeed, it's been about 30 years in the making. They've been researching this. And he said, also think about this if you're faith-based and you're thinking, oh, no, it's a sign of the beast, that in part, it's almost miraculous how this vaccine, the mRNA, came to be in a time just when we need it. Do you mind if I play that?
Please, go ahead.
All right, we'll take
a listen. Well, you know, we're talking about the fact that these messenger RNA vaccines are brand new vaccines. And this is true because with the COVID-19 vaccines developed both by Pfizer, BioNTech, as well as Moderna, this is the first time that these vaccines will be used on a large scale in human populations. But, and so many people are afraid, you know, and are concerned because they're new. Are they really effective? Are they really safe? And couple that with the fact that these vaccines were developed in record time. Prior to this, I think the fastest a vaccine has ever been developed is 4 years. And here we've gone from basically developing a vaccine and having it ready to be deployed in less than a year, in about 6 to 9 months. And so this causes a lot of fear in people. But I think it's really important to remember that these vaccines have been developed over the span of 30 years. The process of developing these mRNA vaccines has literally taken 30 years. To actually execute these vaccines has been very, very difficult. And what was happening is that at the very point in time that the COVID-19 pandemic hit, that we had developed RNA vaccines to the point that we already were in small-scale clinical trials with these vaccines for things like Ebola and Zika. And so we worked out by that point in time how to actually do these vaccines.
Yeah, I think when you think about that, this is a tool that's available to you. Vaccines can be a wonderful tool. That doesn't mean that they are above scrutiny. It doesn't mean that we give into it and just say, oh, yay, because adjuvants that are often put in vaccines, not in the mRNA, by the way, it's a very different kind of vaccine, but the adjuvants that are put in can sometimes cause secondary problems. There's a whole government entity that tracks that kind of a thing that we've talked about. But and as even Dr. Rana said, you know, there are certain segments of the population that probably shouldn't get this vaccine. And that's where, as you said, you look into it, you ask those who are an authority that you believe in and all of that. But the more important thing that I was so excited to have you on to talk about is to help us with this spirit of fear. Now, the Bible says God didn't give us a spirit of fear, but of love, power, and sound mind. I'm telling you what, you look on social media, there is not a whole lot of sound mind going on there, Curtis.
No, amen to that. And I think the one of the key things that I want to call Christians to is this notion that actually that it's thoroughly biblical, is that God gave us experts, God gave us institutions to help us navigate life, including life's health physicians. We have so much of the fear and distrust is the distrust of experts and the distrust of institutions. And I actually think that that is not fundamentally a biblical perspective. Think about how health was structured in the Old Testament. It was through the priests. It was not every person made a decision completely for themselves. It was the priest that certified.
Don't you think there's balance, though? Because we don't just give ourselves. I mean, we're a government of, by, and for we the people. And, you know, we've seen in the past where people just complicitly go with what the government says. And then you end up with absolute chaos, deaths, discrimination, wars. So, you know, there really has to be a balance. Because in some cases in our government, we have people who are appointed who become these gurus, and they don't have accountability, and they don't have other scientists that are saying, wait a minute, let's look at this. And one narrative, sure, and one narrative only is pushed. So shouldn't there be some balance there as well?
Absolutely. And I think one of the things that you do is you actually look at the track record of these institutions, and you see, have they acted, generally speaking, on our behalf and for our good? And in this case, the institutions that we're talking about they're not perfect. All the research institutions or the CDC or the NIH, they're human. again, these are human institutions. So they're, of course, going to be flawed. So we can't seize upon one flaw and make a blanket judgment. Oh, we can't ever trust that institution. You wouldn't do that with your spouse or your friend or some individual. Well, that
kind of depends
one
on
flaw,
how big the flaw is, I think.
Sure. And you have to, and do they admit when they've made a flaw? And do they repent of it? So you're looking for, in the same way that you're looking to, you make these kinds of evaluations of individuals, you do the same with institutions. And you see, what's their track record? Have they acted on my behalf? When they are wrong, do they admit it? And in general, I would say that the institutions that are overseeing the vaccine have proven to be, generally speaking, reliable. In fact, all of us rely on them all the time. I mean, if you have your child who's gotten strep throat, for instance, right, and you go to your doctor and you get an antibiotic or some prescription, you don't know for yourself for sure whether or not what is in that medicine or what effect it was or what the studies were. You're essentially trusting your doctor, and you're trusting your doctor's knowledge of all the research institutions that stand behind it.
Well,
like
see,
the
now,
FDA
I,
that approved
I'm a little
that,
bit different that, on that. And that's why I was so excited to have you on, because we come from a different mindset. I don't trust. I do my own research and take authority over my own body in conjunction with my doctor. I don't go in and just say, okay, you know it all, do it to me. Because antibiotics is a perfect example. We've so overused antibiotics that by 2050, even the CDC and other people in authority that you've cited are saying antibiotics may have outlived their usefulness, that we may not have effective antibiotics anymore, because we give them for everything from earaches to, just routinely. And so
But again, Michelle,
how did you
learn that information? You learned that because some institution that you ended up actually trusting to do the research to realize that there's overuse of antibiotics. So you ended up relying on some expert. It was a different set of experts, perhaps, than, what was the prevailing wisdom. But that was that. But we all have to, we yes. ultimately mm-hmm. always have to trust someone and some institution to guide
and
us
question
through
authority.
Life.
It is okay to question authority. There is one authority, to me, there is one thing that is irrefutable, and that's the person and the work of Jesus Christ. Everything else we can kind of question, but as we wind up our conversation today, Curtis, what we cannot do is operate in fear. So you and I may come from maybe a different way of looking at it, and we're debating it in a healthy, okay, let's look at this kind of a way. But one thing that is irrefutable is that there is a God. And you can refute it if you want. That's okay. As you're listening, as you're watching, you can email me, michelle@mymichellelive.com. But for me, the person and the work of Jesus Christ, irrefutable. Everything else, I'm open for debate. And I'm even open for debate on that. But you're not going to change my mind. But what we cannot do is, as people of faith, saying that we have faith, operate in a spirit of fear. Do your homework. Be willing to listen to another point of view, because you may learn something that actually could save your life. I'll give you the final word.
No, I think those are great words, Michelle, and I think we're in agreement, absolutely, that the call of Jesus here is to actually not give into that spirit of fear, and that it should put us in open to actually ask questions and to seek information from those we trust. And that would be my final word to your listeners, is who would you trust if you were in a threat or in danger of getting cancer or heart disease or kidney disease? That same person is going to be the best person who's going to guide you on COVID and the vaccine. So I would start there and ask them, and not actually retreat into fear and not do anything, but rather step out and actually engage actively on this decision. And it is a decision. Everybody has to make a decision on the vaccine. The decision not to get a vaccine is a decision. And so you should approach it as something that you want to seek the best help you can to guide you on that decision.
Well put. That is a decision. So not doing it is a decision as well. That should be as informed as your decision to get it. So well put. And thank you so much. I know I'm kind of feisty and you put up with me. I really like that. I like that
about
you.
Super, happy to do so. And glad you're out there trying to get people to think well. And I love your call to folks to actually not fear. So I think I'm all for that.
Well, I appreciate it. I hope you'll join me again sometime.
happy to do.
So sweet, her words are like honey drizzled in your ear.
Sounds like a sticky mess to me, but hey, if you like that kind of thing, keep listening.
Shine.
Where the sun don't. Tushy.
The $40 bidet.
It's got your backside at mymichellelive.com.
From Wild Scrubbrush.
To Gentlemen Refined. Stash Wax. From Real Bearded Men at mymichellelive.com.
The friendliest voice on the internet, but not the biggest voice. For My Michelle Live, here's Michelle.
Hey, it is Health Watch Wednesday. Should not be afraid. Whatever it is that you decide to do, be informed, make the right decision, and don't walk in fear. But a lot of people do. You heard the poll a little bit earlier that a lot of people have a wrong perception of how many people are actually dying from COVID. That's one of the problems. Another issue is that people don't realize what the real data is saying.
Coronavirus is nothing new. About 30% of all common colds are actually coronaviruses. And what they're finding is there may be some cross immunity. I'm not a virologist, but the studies show that people who create antibodies, those little warriors within your body that go to attack viruses. If you had a common cold and it was a coronavirus, you may actually have some cross immunity to COVID-19, which is one of the reasons why we think so few people under a threshold age are getting very sick, and very few of them are.
And what is that threshold age? Who is actually getting the coronavirus? Listen.
If you look at the numbers, you see that the most rising cases that we see are one in younger cohorts, that is a younger group of people who are getting the virus. Now, if you are under the age of 17, you have a better chance of getting hit by lightning than succumbing to the disease. And if you're under the age of 45, the chances of dying of COVID are practically zero, according to Stanford professors. And so we have to understand those risks and take them into account. So when you see a large cohort, for example, the largest growing sector here in California are Latinos between the ages of 18 and 34. And that whole sector of age, 18 to 34, are people in the workforce who, for some reasons, for services, for healthcare, they have to get tested. And in some cases, they have to get tested twice to get back to work safely. And when we see them get it, they typically, if they get a positive note back, they didn't even realize that they had it because their symptoms are so light or so unmentionable, and they recover very quickly. In fact, here on the West Coast, California, Oregon, Washington, there hasn't been a single person under the age of 20 who has died of COVID. So we know that younger cohorts can deal with as well. And it actually gets us better to a place once we have some more better treatments and everything else, where we can get to that, infamous herd immunity.
That's from Cousy News. That is a data expert, Justin Hart, as he broke down the concerns and even what is considered fear-mongering by some in the media that is creating this hysteria. And maybe in some cases, our last guest said, don't be afraid, just get the shot. But for others, they may say, well, you know what, I may want a second opinion. I may want to hear more to the story. Man is fallible. I want to know for sure what all of this is about and not just be pushed into it. And that's where our next guest may be along those lines of thinking as well. We decided to look at the whole story. So we will continue to take this topic on, and I've invited an expert. Now, he is Dr. Hotze joins us today. Now, I'm delighted to have him. He's already become one of my favorite people. He's probably one of the top 10 amazingly pleasant people on the planet. And that's not even getting to his resume. Dr. Stephen Hotze, MD, he is president of the American Academy of Biologically Identical Hormone Therapy, which is another subject I would love to take on with you. He's a member of the Pan American Allergy Association, and his resume is, inches long if you're reading it. So what we're just going to do is just welcome you, first of all, Dr. Hotze. It's so good to have you.
Michelle, it's a pleasure to be here with you and your listeners, and greetings to you from Houston, Texas.
Where you don't have to wear a mask. I was just in Houston 2 weeks ago. Loved that city, and it was so nice to walk around. But you know what was interesting? Still about maybe 30% of the folks walked around with masks. The establishments you went in, they wore masks and still had some protocols. I guess that is sometimes what happens when you let people make choices for their own health.
That's right. And some people have been, they've been acclimated to wearing masks, and they wear masks everywhere. I think they sleep in their masks. And there's others like me who just don't wear masks and haven't worn masks and know the detrimental and adverse effect masks have had.
And we unfortunately don't hear about it. It almost is so bothersome. It sounds a bit like propaganda when you turn on the radio and they say, well, yes, this is what you must do, and this is how you must be protected. Supermarkets, wherever you may be, it's being blasted into our ears visually with audio. And yet, doctor, I want on our program to give all of the facts. There are some good facts that are being talked about with vaccines, but there are also a lot of things that we don't get to hear. People are afraid to hear anything that goes against their narrative. Why is that? Goodness.
Well, every political system historically, going back to ancient times, has already always operated using fear as the main method to control the population. And they've done it in modern times, Nazi Germany, in communist Russia, China, Vietnam, Venezuela, Cuba, and even here now in the United States, you create fear. And fear has been shown to cause people to cut off their cognitive ability, their thinking ability. They won't rationalize anymore. They operate on a basis of fear, and they're willing to allow those in authority to tell them what they can do to be safe. So the object of their fear, which in this case would be the plandemic, the scamdemic, I call it, of the coronavirus infection. They have got people panicked and in mass hysteria since the get-go. I mean, this goes way back to last March, 2020. And it's all about power, control, and money. And the healthcare bureaucrats, the mainstream media, and the politicians have used this as a way to cause people to be willing to give up their God-given unalienable rights and liberties, and in exchange for what I call a delusion of safety, which it doesn't give them safety. Let me mention to you about this virus. The coronavirus, by the way, was the first time the coronavirus really came along and caused any kind of problems was back in 2002. That was SARS-1 coronavirus, and SARS is for stands for respiratory infection, severe respiratory infection or syndrome, SARS-1. And then we had the MERS, which is the Middle East Respiratory Syndrome. That was another coronavirus in 2012. And then we have SARS-2 now. And the coronavirus, and there are four other coronaviruses that have been identified that cause the common cold. Believe it or not, one of the common causes of the cold is a coronavirus. So this coronavirus is... The coronavirus family is not unknown to those that are in virology. It's been around for numerous years. Interestingly enough, back in 2003, now this is hard to imagine, and I've documented it, and I've found the patents online, but the CDC, which is not even a government agency, most people think of the CDC, Center for Disease Control, as a government agency. It's not. It's a private agency. It's privately owned. It's a private corporation. A 501c3, but it's private. They, in 2003, this is hard to believe, but it's true, and you can check it. They patented the coronavirus. And they began to do work on the coronavirus back in 2003 in the various labs, one lab at Duke and another at at Harvard and a couple of other schools in their labs. And they began to genetically modify this coronavirus. And then there was some pushback because you can't create viruses for biological warfare in the United States. It's unethical. So what they did is they turned around and they transferred this virus to the Wuhan lab in China and ended up financing it through a series of financial dealings with middle organizations. So it didn't look like it came from the CDC itself, but it was placed over there. And we know the rest of the story. It was manipulated in China and released. And here we are. So, but the coronavirus in and of itself is not a dangerous virus, any more dangerous than the common flu virus is. Which yes, is a, people die maybe, when they get
exactly,
infected.
Yes.
If they have coexisting conditions, and the average age in America of people who have died is approaching 80 years of age. Half of those people live in nursing homes, and they have 3.6 comorbidities. What would that be? Obesity, diabetes, heart disease, kidney disorders, liver problems, a host of health problems that they have that they're dying from. You know, remember the average age of males is, I think, 78.6 years, and a female's 82 years life expectancy. So the people that are dying, the majority of people that are dying have lived up to their normal life expectancy. And so the coronavirus may be the straw that broke the camel's back, but it wasn't the entire cause of their death. Just like, and most people are unaware of this. You know, they go, all these people are dying in nursing homes. The cold hard facts of it, people don't get it put in nursing homes to be rehabilitated. People go to nursing homes and put there by their family because they require around the clock attention that the family members are no longer able to give. And they maybe can't afford to have people living in their home, bringing in help, nursing care, around the clock nursing care. So they put them in a facility and in a nursing home. And the average life expectancy in a nursing home is 2.3 years. That's really the last stop. That's just, I don't mean to sound cavalier about it, but that's just what happens. And in America, 20% of the people who die in America every year, 2019, there were 2.8 million people died. 20% of those people died in nursing homes. They were nursing home patients, residents. Now, they may have gone to the hospital and died, but they were nursing home residents. So 20% of the population out of 2.8 million is, you know, you're approaching 500,000 people that died that were nursing home residents in 2019. Nobody said anything. No. What did they die of? Primarily infections. They got the flu, they got pneumonia, they got sepsis, they got bacterial infections, they got some kind of viral infection. They had, and they already had many pre-existing conditions besides their age. And then they were exposed to something and they died. And that's what happens, unfortunately. Well, this is what's happened now with the coronavirus. The coronavirus for people under the age of 70 has a 99.98% survival rate, and very small percentage of the population, even if they've been exposed to it, have any symptoms regarding it. It's less than 20%. We find many more percent of the people have antibodies to it, which means our innate immune system already recognizes the coronavirus because we've been exposed to it through the colds. We've been exposed to the coronavirus from 2005 or 2002 and 2012. We've come in contact with it, and our innate immune system and our adaptive immune system already recognize it. And as soon as they see that pathogen, they whack it and it's gone and we don't have any symptoms and they're fine. So this whole concept then that this is a terrible, if all you show is people dying, what if they did this on, I would say, what if every night they showed car wrecks of people dying in cars over and over again? And that's all you heard about and talked about. Oh, we have another person died on I-10 today. Here's a picture. And you have this picture and you go carrying them out in the ambulance and you had one after another. We had five people die today in Texas in motor accidents. They showed it over and over again in the United States. Well, guess what? If none of us drove in automobiles and we just took bicycles or walked, I'll assure you there would be no deaths from motor vehicle accidents.
Well, you know, Dr. Hotze, I putting it in perspective, I remember being a kid and watching Jaws for the first time. And I did not want to swim in the ocean for decade, right? And how many shark attacks are there? And I don't want to minimize when you get sick with this thing, it can really wipe you out. It's not fun. But oftentimes, putting it in perspective, so is the flu. We can also talk about real issues that people are dying of that do have a higher mortality rate, and that's heart disease.
Heart disease, cancer, please. All these things that, so here the people are quarantined at home and they're gaining 20 pounds eating Bluebell ice cream, you know, they got inflammation in their coronary arteries and they're dying of heart attacks. Or they're getting heart disease? It's in gaining weight and their diabetes is out of control. All these things are problems, but they've got everybody focused on one thing. And that's the way the powers to be do. They want to create fear in a population. So all of a sudden, anybody and everybody is a potential virus giver, and they may infect you. So it's like everybody's walking around like a leper. People don't want to touch each other, or they haven't. You know, that's in Texas. That went on a little while. It didn't last very long in Texas. And I must say, even when I first heard about this, and I knew it was a sham, but I was still a little bit worried. I worried about it until I thought through this whole thing. And realize whenever you have mass hysteria and you have a herd of people doing the same thing, it reminds me of what my mother had taught me. She said, son, don't follow the herd. If you do, you'll get stampeded over the cliff or you'll get stampeded to death. Move away from the herd. Look at it and lead it in another direction, which is what I've done. And my whole life has been built upon being a contrarian. So I am a contrarian when it comes to the dangers of COVID. And frankly, those people that I know that have contracted a viral illness, have they had the COVID? I don't know. Did they have the flu? I don't know. They had a viral illness. And we treated them with hydroxychloroquine, ivermectin. We gave them Zithromax. If they had cough and congestion, we put them on cortisol. We gave them budesonide inhalers, oxygen if they needed it. It was rare that we had to do that. And we kept their oximeter. But if we got them quickly, right away, I don't care how old they were, if they were 85 or 45, if we got them on ivermectin and hydroxychloroquine right away within the first 24 hours, they would be well within 2 or 3 days completely. If they let it settle in their lungs, just like the flu, this is a respiratory virus. So it's just like the flu. If somebody has the flu and it gets in their lungs, they get bronchitis, they're going to struggle with it for a week to 2 weeks. That's just the way it is. If you've ever had the flu before, and everybody has at one time, it can take the wind out of yourself just like the COVID can. So that's why you need to, the most important thing you can do is not wait till you get it, is prevent yourself from getting it. And the way you can do that is you build up your immune system. How is it, Michelle, that you're alive today, and yet you've been exposed to trillions of viruses and bacteria every day? Now, for all your germaphobes,
I'm a superhero.
There you go. For all the germaphobes out there, this is going to make you sick. But the day you were born and came through your mother's birth canal, you were slathered with billions and trillions of viruses and bacteria. That was normal. That's part of the birthing process. And that's how your immune system comes in contact with these viruses and bacteria. And guess what? You didn't die. Your immune system all of a sudden got trained. It started to get strong. And every day you were exposed. Look, think about little kids crawling around on the floor, eating. They got their little binky and they drop it on the floor and it's dirty and the dogs come up and lick them. They got their brothers and sisters around and, you know, they're pooping their pants. And, you know, there's all kinds of germs that we come in contact with. I'm 70 years old. I've been in practice of medicine 46 years. I have overseen the care of about 40,000 individuals, either personally or through my center. Now, I practiced in the emergency room for 6 years. So I have seen individuals, patients who have come in that I've evaluated who had viral and bacterial meningitis, viral and bacterial pneumonia, viral and bacterial gastrointestinal problems, staph all over their body, boils, strep infections, pseudomonas infections in the lungs, tuberculosis, among other diseases. I never wore a mask one day. I never quarantined myself one day. I never quarantined my family of eight. Never did. We didn't get sick. We didn't get these problems. Why? Because we have an immune system. That immune system recognizes and eliminates foreign pathogens that come into our system. And we're exposed to them. The more we're exposed to them, the stronger the immune system gets. It's kind of like lifting weights. You want to be strong and healthy? Well, you go lift weights on a, say, every other day. Your body builds up strength. Now, let's just say you don't do that for 2 or 3 years. Well, you find out you can't lift near as much weights. And when you do, you get very sore. So if you want to stay healthy with your muscles, you have a steady workout program. If you want to be healthy with your immune system, you don't, obviously, you wash your hands after you go to the, mom said, wash your hands after you go to the bathroom. Right, right. That makes sense. Okay. We don't want to spread anything. But this whole concept of having to wear masks everywhere and anywhere and to social distance, both are crazy because the virus is a nanoparticle and it goes right through that holes in the mask and it goes around the mask and it floats in the air and then gets up in the vents and it floats everywhere. Every one of us, any one of you listening has been exposed numerous times to the flu virus and to the coronavirus. Why is it, maybe you have been sick, but why is it for those that you haven't been sick, why are you not sick? Because your immune system's been fighting this off. Your innate immune system and your adaptive immune system. The innate immune system is your sentinel. That's your foot soldiers that recognize a pathogen when it comes into your body, whether it's virus or bacteria or even fungus or worms. It attacks it and tries to engulf it and kill it. And usually that works. If that doesn't work, then we have the snipers. And the snipers have rifles and they shoot bullets, which are antibodies. And if you don't kill it initially through your innate immune system with your white blood cells, then your lymphocytes begin to make, this is your humoral antibody, make antibodies to that. And that's with bullets shot from the gun. And then the immune system memorizes this. So next time it comes in contact with that pathogen, it whacks it and you're immune. That's what happens when you have, you know, when I grew up, I've had a handful of vaccinations since I was a kid. I had DPT, I had smallpox, and I had polio. That's what I've had. I've never had any other vaccine the rest of my life. I think when I was 13, I cut myself on a rusty pipe or something, and I had to get a shot. And that's it. So how is it I'm 70 years old, I'm vibrant, and I'm healthy? Well, I've kept my immune system healthy. And how do you do that? This is really important, folks. First and foremost, excuse me. First and foremost, what you eat is so critical to your health. So you want to cut down on your simple carbs and your sugars, which are highly inflammatory. You want to eat good, healthy, whole foods. If you're going to eat vegetables, lightly steam them. Put a bunch of vegetables in your in your salad. Eat some meats, and you're going to be fine. And healthy. Fats are good for you too. So you want to eat that, but you want to stay as much as you can. You want to stay away from the junk food and all the packaged food, bagged food, or foods that's in cans because
and
it's got a
whole. Why are we not talking about this? I mean, we talk about wearing a mask as though that's going to be the sole thing that we need. It's going to protect us, and which I question, because if you wear a mask, then I shouldn't have to wear a mask because your mask is protecting you. But nonetheless, we aren't talking about how we eat, cutting out sugars, taking vitamin C, D, and boosting our immune system. Our only solution is a one size fits all. Everybody must get jabbed. And I did want to talk about the vaccine availability. I'm not against vaccines. I think that that can be advantageous in some regards, but a one-size-fits-all that may not be questioned, to me, is a bit scary, much like you were saying, the herd mentality.
Right.
Step back from the herd for a moment and make a logical decision. That's all I'm saying.
Well, when I was in my first year of my surgery residency, we had a professor of medicine by the name of Herb Fred, and every time we'd make presentations and make statements about what we thought a patient had, he would say, why do you think that's so? And then we'd give him another answer. He'd say, really? Why is that so? And he'd keep asking why over and over again. It's the Socratician method of teaching. He'd keep asking why until we were just totally naked. We didn't know why. And he proved to us, and he said, you know what's wrong with you doctors is that most doctors are unwilling to think. Why? Because it takes time and they're lazy. And that's basically, that was his philosophy. So that struck me. And so ever since then, I've always questioned, why is this so? This whole concept that this so-called vaccine, which is not a vaccine at all, by historic measures, it's not a vaccine. It's an injection of mRNA into your system, which has never, ever been done in humans before as a treat, treatment modality or therapy of any kind. And let me explain. A vaccine, according to the CDC, definition of a vaccine is when you take a pathogen and it's killed or attenuated, either a virus or a bacteria, and you take the protein from that virus or bacteria and you inject it into the system. It stays in your bloodstream. It doesn't get into your cells. It isn't alive. It doesn't reproduce anything, but your adaptive immune system recognizes it as foreign and then makes antibodies, specific antibodies to that protein from a virus or bacteria. So the next time you come in contact with a live virus or bacteria with which you've been injected, your body already recognizes it. The innate immune system knows it's a foreign pathogen, so it attacks it, and then your antibodies start. You already have the memory, and your antibodies kill it, and you don't get it. You're immune, and you can't pass it on. Well, this is not what this particular so-called vaccine does. It's an experimental gene modification injection. And I've read the others. Well, it's not a gene modification. Blah, 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 blah. It's not experimental. Well, let me just tell you, go to the Pfizer or Johnson & Johnson or to the Moderna website. The first sentence says, this vaccine, they call it a vaccine because if they do, then they have no product liability if there's any problems with the vaccine, because the federal government passed rules back in 1986 that there is no product liability. If they give you a vaccine and it kills you or makes you sick or paralyzes you, you can't sue the drug company. They have no liability. What a great deal. I could have a product that there'd be no liability. It's unheard of. Anyway, so what happens, you go look at the website and it says, this vaccine is not approved by the Food and Drug Administration. Wait a minute. I thought it was approved. We're giving it to tens of millions of people. What do you mean it's not approved? It says it's not approved. Well, how can that be? It's authorized, but not approved. To go through the FDA process and get approval, there's a series of animal testing that has to be done. And once that's complete, and if that's shown to be beneficial, then it has human trials. And they do human trials for several years, and then they decide whether or not it's effective or not. Well, there are no animal trials published on these vaccines, these so-called vaccines or experimental injections. There's no animal studies. They went straight to human trials. They did 3 months and said, it's wonderfully effective. That was in England. Well, the British Medical Journal got all the data, and the editor of the British Medical Journal published back, I think it was in September of this last year, his findings. He said, no, it wasn't 95%, it's 19% effective. And we don't know long-term it's going to be effective or not. So let me explain to you how this particular injection, this experimental injection, differs from a historic vaccine. What they're injecting you with is a synthesized mRNA, messenger RNA. You go like, what in the world is that, Doc? Well, I believe most of you listeners have heard of your chromosomes or genes. You have genes. That's in the DNA. The DNA is inside the nucleus of your cells, and that DNA is what determines your sex, either male or female, whether you have brown hair, blue eyes, you know, whether you're what your ethnicity is, the size of your bones, the size of your muscles, your brain, your intelligence. All these things are determined by your DNA, which is a combination of the chromosomes from mom and dad. Then the DNA also governs the and directs your cell's processes on what they need to make in the cells, what needs to be done and how it needs to be done. It's the software program inside the, think of the nucleus as the hard drive, the DNA is your software program. And that software program wants to instruct the inner workings of the cell, the organelles in the cell, what to do. So it has to do that, and it does that by means of making a messenger. It copies itself onto a messenger RNA, which is like, you think of the DNA as the heads of a coin and the mRNA as the tails. So it makes a copy of itself, and then that mRNA goes to a ribosome, which is an organelle in your cell, and it makes specific proteins that the DNA was produced at that time. That makes sense? You've got the DNA, with, you've got your cell, your nucleus, which is your hard drive. You've got your DNA, which is your software. You've got a copy of that software, which you might say would be like a thumb drive. And then it goes to the ribosome, which is like a 3D printer. And it causes that ribosome to make a protein, which would be the product that comes out of the 3D printer. So let's just say, for example, Michelle, you had a printer that made a hat, and the hat could say anything you wanted on it. And I came over to your place. You said, look at this program I've got, and I've got a cable that goes to my 3D printer, and look at this. I can make all kinds of hats. And I said, you can print a hat? Yeah, I can. So I look at your software program, which is the DNA, and then I see you have a thumb drive, and that thumb drive you attach to your computer and you download that software. And that now the thumb drive is the mRNA, and you go plug it into your printer, 3D printer, which is a ribosome, and it prints out a hat that says, I love Seattle. And there it pops out. I go, wow, can I do that? I'd like to have one that says, I love Texas. You said, sure. Well, how can I do it? Well, just download my software program on your thumb drive, then you can stick that in there. So we write the program to say, I love Texas. We do the same thing, take the thumb drive, which is the RNA, put it into the 3D printer, pops out, I love Texas. Okay, so you understand the analogy, right? Does that make sense?
Yeah, it sure does. It sure does.
Okay, so now think of this. What they're injecting you with is a thumb drive that doesn't come from your DNA. It's been made in the lab. And this thumb drive, which is mRNA, is genetically... RNA basically is your genetic code, but they're putting in a genetic code that they made in the lab. It's kind of like putting a virus in your cell, and that is going to now control your ribosomes. It's nothing that your body would ever do, but now you've got this synthetic RNA from the lab, and it's going to go to your ribosome. It's going to start making spike protein. It's going to start making viral protein. How much? In every cell in your body, everywhere. And it's going to cause your immune system to be highly overactive. It's going to be making antibodies to this all the time. Well, this is what they said. Well, that's good. You're making antibodies to the spike protein. Next time you come in contact with the virus, well, you're going to whack it. That's how that's their thinking. Now, this has never been tried in humans before. It was tried. mRNA vaccine was done in animals in 2005 and again in 2012 to the SARS-1 and to the MERS coronavirus. And what they did is they took animals and they injected them with mRNA synthesized that caused their ribosomes to make these virus particles to which their immune system made antibodies. And then they studied them and gave them two shots over a 3-week period, studied their antibody. Yeah, they got antibodies. This is good. Now let's re-expose them to the live virus. Well, guess what happened? Many of the animals got sick and some of them died. And they went, oh, we better not give that to humans. We don't know what would happen. Then they tried it again in 2012 with the same results. So they stopped. This is why you have animal studies. You do animal studies to see in an animal if what you're doing has the potential of working safely, because basically we have the same biochemistry or similar biochemistry. And if it works in an animal and you don't have problems, then you're willing to do trials in humans. We bypassed this complete trial of animals and we went directly to humans. So guess who the guinea pigs are? Humans. Now, yeah. I don't know about you. I don't know about you, but my immune system's healthy. I take vitamin A, B, C, high doses of vitamin D, and I highly recommend 5 to 10,000 international units a day to our guests. That's what we recommend. We want to keep our vitamin D levels up approaching 70 to 100.
That's more than the FDA recommendations, isn't it?
Well, the RDA is the recommended deficient amount. That's the RDA, recommended deficient amount. Yeah, we don't listen to what the FDA has to say. That, if I did that, then that's ridiculous. I know this, and after testing literally tens of thousands of our guests here at the OT Health and Wellness Center, we find that most patients, about 90% of them, have very, very low levels of vitamin D. Where does vitamin D come from? It comes from your cholesterol in your body being converted by UV light into vitamin D, which is a pro-hormone that stimulates your immune system. It's involved in over 200 different biochemical processes in the body, and you need magnesium to help activate it properly. But vitamin D is very important. Most Americans, you, Michelle, me, we spend our time inside.
Especially during the pandemic, right? During lockdown. Yeah,
well, but really, people are inside. And you're up there north of the 35th parallel for 4 to 5 months. If you went outside in bathing suit in a bikini, you couldn't get any vitamin D because of the direction of the earth. And it's wintertime up there. There's no, the UV light doesn't get through, and you can't convert it into vitamin D. And even if you were to go out down here in Texas and you went down on the beach during the summer, they slather their bodies with all this ointment and cream that blocks the UV light.
That's true.
So people are low in vitamin D. And we, our experience is to get them up to a level of 70 or above, 70 to 100, which we believe gives you the best protection. This has been shown in studies around the world. There's a strong correlation between high levels of vitamin D in the blood levels. There's a high correlation between decreased incidence of viral illnesses, including flu and coronavirus, as well as decreased symptoms if you do contract. So vitamin D is extremely important. Zinc's important too, and we recommend 50 to 100 milligrams of zinc, and we use magnesium, 600 to 800 milligrams. Most Americans are low on magnesium, and then probiotics. So it's A, B, C, D. Zinc, magnesium, probiotic is a good immune system strengthener. And you've never heard this from Dr. Fauci or Dr. Burke or any of them. They never talk about what you can do to stem, they never talk about the immune system. It's as if it didn't exist. All they talk about is vaccines. Well, why is that? Where's the money?
Well, you have to follow that money, and you have to look at their background and their money connections. Right. There is something there, people. That's something we need to pay attention to. This is our health. This is our future. This is our children's health that's on the line. We have to think it through and take command of it ourselves. And you're right. Follow that money, doctor.
Well, listen, the other thing, too, there is no reason in the world a child or young adult should ever get this experimental injection. They have no chance of contracting the disease. If they do, it is absolutely minimal.
Well, and the chances of dying. What's the harm, though? That's what I'm concerned about, is that you see people lining up and saying, I'm getting my baby vaccinated.
But oh, my goodness.
Is there a harm in that?
Yes.
Is there a concern?
Harm. Sure, there's terrible harm in that. This is going to lead to a huge amount of autoimmune disease going down the road. We don't know how bad it's going to be, but we haven't done trials to study it, for crying out loud. Why would we just go out and vaccinate everybody in the world, and then we're going to have these mandates where you're required, you have to have a vaccine, what do they call it, a vaccine scorecard?
Passport card, correct.
Yeah. Vaccine passport? Really? Come on. That's ridiculous. And this is experimental. This is not, I read somebody said, well, it's not experimental. The FDA is authorized. They didn't approve it. It would not be experimental if it had been approved by definition. The reason it's not approved is because they never did the experiments on it. So now they can only authorize it. So now we'll find out if it has any problems or not. But it's an experiment. We don't know what it's going to do because we never did the experiments. So because we bypass the experiments and authorize it, it's no longer experimental? Of course it's experimental. By definition, it's experimental. And I don't want them experimenting on me, my family, my kids, my grandkids. And I got 24. I don't want them experimenting. They're fine. All of them had some kind of, many of them in my family had some kind of flu-like illness, you know, 6 or 8 months ago. They all did fine. Nobody had a problem. My wife had a fever for one day. You know, she's 72. She had a fever for a day. And she felt tired for a week. Well, not a big deal. But what we did, we used hydroxychloroquine, we used ivermectin and some other preparations that have been shown study-wise.
And that's important because we're not hearing what is really effective. You mentioned some of the drugs that can be highly effective, especially when used right away. We know, and I have talked with folks that deal with homeopathy who have had virtually no deaths with homeopathic physicians treating folks. That's been astounding. There are naturopaths who use standard protocol for viral infection, and they've had great success, but we are not hearing about it. What we're hearing about is case count, which means nothing. I want to know how many people, well, how are they being treated, and how many people are truly either dying or having long-term horrific results of the coronavirus, and why? Is it because they're overweight? Is it because they have pre-existing conditions? That's the whole truth that we are not hearing, and why I'm so glad that you're joining us today.
Well, Michelle, it's a privilege to be here and try to, my goal is to help educate the population. So I've been on radio programs and TV from San Diego to Long Island, from Anchorage all the way down to Miami and everything in between over the last year. First on the original plandemic is what I call it. And I believe it was planned.
Yeah.
And you can say, well, that's a conspiracy theory. You just, well, all you have to do is go listen to Bill Gates. Just go to Bill Gates, TED Talk, depopulation vaccine. See what Bill Gates has to say about depopulating the world, how important that is, and how vaccines are one of the ways we help depopulate the world. Really? Well, we know this is that this vaccine has the potential of causing infertility. Why would it be? Why would you say it has the potential? Because a protein on the placenta is very similar to the spike protein in shape. And so the antibodies can attack the placenta and can cause infertility. This is why if you're a young woman and want to have children, and you know, or you want your daughters to have children, get married someday, would no more give them this experimental gene modifying injection than the man in the moon. I would never do that to them. They're going to be fine. Your kids can be healthy. Eat healthy. Here's what you do: eat healthy, cut out all the junk food. Second thing, get a good night's sleep. Third, exercise. Fourth, take vitamins and minerals and nutrients. If you're older like I am and you get into midlife, well, then make sure you replenish your hormones with the natural bioidentical hormones, both in males and in females. If you're a person of faith and a Christian, put your trust in God. We're not supposed to have a spirit of fear, but of power and love and a sound mind. God gave us a sound mind, and you've got to just think and analyze these things for yourself. And by the way, most physicians simply go along with the herd. They don't want to be outspoken. They don't want people to question them. They don't want to be reported to their medical boards or have their friends. They're just going to follow whatever the standard line is. This is what they did back in Semmelweis's day when Semmelweis, who was in Germany, and they had a whole plague of puerperal sepsis in the Vienna hospitals. But when the women had children born to when they had their babies at home, they didn't have puerperal sepsis. They didn't develop that. Well, it turned out that the doctors between births would go in to the cadaver lab and with bare hands would work on the cadavers. Now they were covered with bacteria and they go right into deliver babies and never wash their hands. Semmelweis said, hey, let's wash our hands. They ostracized him and ran him out of Vienna, ran him to Hungary, took away his license, said he's crazy. Doctors couldn't carry germs on their body.
And these germs, these little invisible things, they were like fairies. I mean, like make believe. That was the mindset of the time.
And it's no different. Whatever the orthodox theology is in medicine, and it is a religion, over time it changes. You know, what was told, you know, the one time they bled people with leeches for crying out loud in a bucket. I mean, that was accepted medical practice.
Yeah. And so, you know, the truth will set you free. And that's why we're trying to look for a deeper truth. I also wanted to talk, you mentioned hormones. And you've written the book, Hormones, Health, and Happiness.
Health and Happiness.
Yeah, I wanted to talk a bit about that. Hormones are something that we don't often talk about, maybe until we get to a certain age, and then it's important. But we don't always understand what our options are and what the effect is. There's a lot we just don't know.
Well, let me tell you what, because you appreciate natural approaches to health, and that's what you built your career around, and in what you do is educate people on this. I will give to any one of your listeners who contacts our office a copy of my first book, which is Hormones, Health, and Happiness. I'll give you the hardback copy. I'll give it to you free of charge with no shipping. I'll send it to you. Plus, I'll send you a copy of another book I wrote called Do a 180 and Take Charge of Your Health, because we do believe that everybody's responsible for their own health. The government, insurance companies, your doctor, your spouse, none of those people are in charge of your health. You can decide to be healthy. It's your choice. And so my recommendation is, if you're traveling down the health freeway on the wrong side of the road, you're going to come to an overpass and liable to get whacked, be injured seriously or killed. Turn that car around, get on the right side, take charge of your health. Don't be a jack-in-the-box type of patient where you're looking for a drug for a bug or a pill for any ill. Get yourself healthy and well. Remember, people are sick. I mean, these drugs are all toxins. And guess what? You can get sicker quicker when you get on all these drugs. And we see people coming into the Hotsey Health and Wellness Center here in Houston, and they got stacks of drugs they're on, and they feel terrible. And so what we do is help them get healthy and well by replenishing their natural occurring hormones, sex hormones, both males and females, thyroid hormone, address the adrenal hormones. And when you do that, that helps restore people and restore their energy, their vitality, their enthusiasm for life. That's what you want. And I'd love to come back and visit with you further about that at some point.
I would love that.
Please don't hesitate to ask me back.
Thank you. And how can folks get in touch with you, Dr. Hotsey?
Well, if you'd like a copy of this book, Hormones, Health, and Happiness, you can put it on your website. It's 281-698-8698. That's 281-698-8698. Tell them you heard me on Michelle's program and you would like a copy of the book or the books, and we'll be glad to send it to you. You could also go to my website. Just go to DuckDuckGo. I won't say what the name of the other one is. DuckDuckGo is a good internet server. But you go to any internet server and type in Hotze, H-O-T-Z-E, health and wellness. If you'd like an immune pack, I've got in my Hotze vitamins. You can go to Hotze vitamins. I've got an immune pack, an adult immune pack, and kids immune pack. And we also, at our pharmacy, Physician's Preference Pharmacy, we carry hydroxychloroquine and ivermectin. So you can contact us there as well. So that's the way to contact us. And if we could serve you in any way or just get you on a path of health and wellness and point you in the right direction, it'd be our privilege to do that.
I sure appreciate you giving us more to the story that we are not getting today. And next time, I am really looking forward to delving a little deeper into your book and learning about hormones, what they do when they deplenish, what happens, educating us. I so appreciate your time today. This has been so, so informative. And again, hey, I stand by. You are in the top 10. I think you may have even moved up a little bit. Absolutely pleasant people to be around. I've loved it today. Thank you.
Michelle, thank you so much. And I wish you the very best and every success.
Thanks for listening. Remember to go to My Michelle Live, like us, share us, help us to grow and spread the God story. We'll catch you next time.
More Health Watch at MyMichelleLive.com.